Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying...
A podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's how we own it.
What's good, family? It's your girl, Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of Street Politicians,
the place where the streets and politics meet.
What's going on, my son, Lennon?
You know, I am blessed and highly favored, man. Father's Day. Juneteenth, long weekend for me, man.
Long weekend. Father's Day was a good day in New York. The whole weekend, a lot of people did a lot of Black stuff, getting together, Black people getting together, doing Black stuff. And I like that. I liked Father's Day falling on Juneteenth. It was something special about it.
It was good because it was a lot of men being celebrated. It was freedom being celebrated. Mm-hmm. We did so many different things. I did a rally with my brother A.T. Mitchell on Saturday. And then we did our march on Sunday. And then went around to a bunch of picnics with my kids, drove them crazy. But
no, we also fed 350 people.
Oh, yeah. We fed 350 people. Shout out to the... what's the name of the bus?
I forget the name because I just know Unique as the young lady who has the food truck.
Diva. Hold on. Now we gotta shout that out.
Make sure we give her proper due for feeding 350 people yesterday in the Bronx. It was really cool, like, you know, to watch the folks show up. Well, what was interesting is how I don't know if anyone else experiences this, and I guess it's happened to me. When someone says it's free, people were looking at us. They were like, what you mean it's free? They didn't believe.
Nobody. It's called Food Fetish. The truck is called Food Fetish.
Okay.
Shout out to my homegirl, Unique. That's one of her entrepreneurial businesses that she started. It's good food, and we fed everybody that came by on 161st Street in the Grand Concourse. We fed You know, so it was a good day. But leading up to this day, Tamika, was crazy to me because, you know, I had all these things to do and I needed to be in New York. And my flight was canceled. I was supposed to be back here on Thursday night and my flight got canceled just randomly. Like, I'm on my way to the airport and randomly they just sent me a notification. First it was, your flight is delayed an hour. The next thing I know, your flight is canceled. Mm. I'm like, what the hell? Like,
but that happens, flights get canceled.
Nah, they don't get canceled. Like, this is not something that happens to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? My flight doesn't really get canceled. And then we heard that there were so many flights canceled. Over 6,000 flights were canceled within those days. And yes, I'm just,
it happened. It was 6,500 just on the day that you were caught up. Then the next day, my flight was canceled. Where was I going? To DC. And that was part of another 5,000 flights. So it's been each and every day. They've been canceling thousands of flights. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
But they're charging massive money for the tickets.
They cancel your flight. Then when you're trying to do something else, they're trying to charge you $2,000 or $3,000 to get a flight, places that normally cost $300 or $400. Like, I don't even understand, like, price gouging at its best right now. Like, I don't know what these airports are trying to do. These airlines are trying to get some money back. Some people say it's jet fuel. They don't want to spend the money on jet fuel, so they're trying to make sure all of the flights are packed. Then there's people saying that there's no workers. But whatever it is, it's coming out of our pockets. It's inconveniencing us. I had to get back here on Friday. I had to rush, miss my kids, things that I was supposed to do with my children, supposed to take my son to the doctor, was supposed to pick them up. Then I had to rush and try to get ready for the rally. Had to get t-shirts. I was so backed up, man. So I don't know who else experienced these flights, but I seen something where Rick Ross was talking about it. Said something that if you book him for a flight, you got to book him now. You got to rent him a jet because they're canceling flights. He's like, his price is $50,000 to book because he needs a private jet because the flights are just getting canceled. And he doesn't even want to deal with that no more. So
it's, but that has been, it has been a thing that's been happening. I remember being, I don't know where I was. Anyway, they have been changing flight times, canceling flights. And I know there are a lot of people that have different reasons why they think it's happening. But when you really get down to the bottom, to like the, as they say, the nitty gritty of it all, one thing we know for sure is that pilots have been complaining about being overworked. So that's definitely an issue that pilots have been saying they're not going to work. Like, you know, once they finish flying into a particular place, there is an expectation, or maybe the airlines, I don't even know if they, because we can't really speak on behalf of folks. We're not in those conversations, but just from chatter and reading a few stories online, what I have found is that pilots are saying that once they get to a particular place, rather than them flying back or, you know, continuing to a next location, they shutting it down and going in because they're tired.
So I guess the pandemic has caused just pilots to say they quit. They don't want to work no more.
But this is the thing. And this is where you and I, well, I think you finally came to an understanding around the pandemic. People died, lots and lots of people, hundreds of thousands of people. We're probably at like 1 million people at this point who died as a result of either having COVID and then getting complications, or caught up in the healthcare system and, you know, things happened to them and they didn't get the proper care. That is, regardless of whether you want to say, well, it wasn't actual COVID in their blood, but the problem is that COVID came And when COVID became an issue, as a result of it, it impacted a lot of people and people died. You lost airline stewardess, you lost pilots, you lost just people in general. And with so many pilots being older, you know, being, you know, I mean, it's not many Black ones, but anyway, there's so many that are older, what have you, people probably retired. Like, who the hell wants to be on a plane closed in with other individuals or having to go through airports and traveling around with folks when you could potentially get a sickness that you don't want and you can retire? You actually can retire at this point. So you had a lot of that element. Then you have people who work in restaurants and other things that just because of, you know, them learning maybe new skills, new things, ways to stay home and work, they're not trying to go back out there. So the whole system is thrown off. Everything is all over the place. And the airlines is caught up as a part of that. But the FAA and whoever else is responsible for airlines and travel, they need to get on top of this, because I'm telling you that plane tickets are super expensive. You don't book the travel. That's what Linda and I do. Well, Jamie actually physically books the travel, but the approval for all the rates and everything, it has to come through either Linda or me. And we are seeing numbers that are making us say we're not traveling places. It's crazy. Like, for instance, in a few days, we were supposed to be in LA to be honored by our girl, Miss Diddy. And even she, when she heard that the price for a ticket could be up to $3,000 and that wasn't even in first class, she's like, you can't come. You just can't be there. It's too expensive.
Yeah, it's outrageous, man. And I don't understand. It's not like they're giving you no extra services. Like, y'all ain't added nothing to it. It's actually like you taking away. We was on a plane the other day where, you know, a lady, quote unquote, was in the back saying that they had to give her IV.
No, she wasn't, quote unquote, she had the IV.
Yeah, had to get IV. And get IV. But they cut off the services. We couldn't even get snacks or anything because they had
no water,
anything on the 3-hour flight. And I'm like, but y'all charging us this ridiculous amount of money. The services have been cut most of the time. Sometimes they ain't got Wi-Fi. It's like, come on, airline. Y'all got to get it together.
But they, you know what? The airlines is acting ghetto. We need
They got to get it. They got to get it together, man. But that was one of the worst experiences, because even after that, they postponed my flight to the next day. And then it was one time, then it was 3 hours. I didn't end up getting back until supposed to be home Thursday at about 9-10 o'clock at night. And I didn't get home to Saturday morning at 2 a.m.
Crazy.
So
they don't care nothing about your kids, your life, your
nothing.
Mama.
Unbelievable. Nothing. And that's the first time that I was in Miami and I did not want to be in Miami. Miami is one of my places that I love to be at, and it's always like a good getaway. It's, you know, beautiful weather, tranquility, and everything. But I did not need to be there and I didn't want to be there, and it pissed me off.
Well, two other news. The airlines is news story number one today. They got to do something. We need to call on the federal government to freaking check the airlines and see what the hell is going on. But the next story is of Henrietta Lacks. Now, we heard about Henrietta Lacks from attorney Ben Crump. And in fact, in his new film, Civil, which was released this past weekend on Juneteenth, Civil, that is on Netflix, and people gonna get tired of us because we're gonna be talking about.
Listen, it's one of the best documentaries that I've ever seen. Like, it's an awesome depiction and just overall understanding of what it is that Ben Crump does, because there's so many people who have the wrong idea about what he does, who he is, even what kind of attorney he is. Like, you know what I'm saying? I've had so many people say, yo, you always get Ben Crump and he always loses. And I'd be like, well, I don't even know if Ben Crump ever lost anything, because I don't even know. I don't think that y'all understand the difference between a civil attorney and the DA. Like, the DA is the person who tries these cases that, you know, police brutality and wrongful, all of these, the DA is responsible for that. And Ben Crump, as a civil lawyer, is responsible for being able to sue and gain monetary, you know, value and relief based on the trauma that comes from the situation. So that's his only job. And people don't know that. So just watching this, and then you get a real idea of what it is that he does and see how serious it is and how engaged he is and how much for our people he is, man. And me knowing that all together just gives me a reference point now. Like when people talk about, oh, Ben Crump is, all right, well, go watch Civil.
Well, you know, he also, and it is his main job is to get punitive damages for families, but that's not the only thing that he does. He advocates for these families. He stands with them.
I'm just saying his job.
Right. He helps to navigate these families through their, you know, crises when in terms of the tragedy that they're experiencing. He also helps to advise the district attorneys and, you know, those people who are involved in fighting the case, that they don't have to listen to him, because there was something happening during the McMichael's trial for killing Ahmaud Arbery. There was this moment when the defense attorney started talking about Ahmaud Arbery's feet, his toenails, and, you know, bringing up other things that was clearly racial slurs. And I remember all of us being there, and when we would have our huddles, because of course the family and other individuals and lawyers of the civil attorneys for the families would be inside the courtroom. And then we were in the spillover area. And as soon as it break, you know, court would break for any reason, they come out and all of us get to huddle and talk through what to do. And, you know, what did we hear? And they explain to us, you know, attorney Lee Merritt was there because obviously he represented Wanda Cooper, which is Ahmaud Arbery's mother. And then you had Ben Crump there representing Ahmaud's father. And so they would come out and they would advise us, and there would be other legal members to help us understand what's happening and also to hear our feedback. And our feedback was that the district attorney needed to go back on race, needed to hit them hard on the issue of race. We were like, why won't she bring up what she sees happening here? And so we know that that attorney Crump and attorney Merritt, they did go back and say something about it, but she still didn't take their advice. So to your point, the district attorney does not have to listen to anything from the civil attorneys, and in fact doesn't even have to really speak to them other than to get some of the evidence that they're looking for. But sometimes they do. So people do need to understand, and I think the film, as you said, is very, very educational. It's educational at best. But Henrietta Lacks is another case, because another part of the film that they're going to get tired of us talking about Ben Crump, but I don't care.
Civil. Make sure the middle part is civil.
No. Well, with Henrietta Lacks, the thing, another part of Civil, where they talk about how people believe that the only cases Ben Crump fights are things that's in the media. Like, oh, he's just looking for attention. He's just going for the highest number. Guess what? Henrietta Lacks was a little old lady that her daughter-in-law happened to be at an event. And while she's sitting in the midst of this luncheon, she hears a doctor talking about some cells that they got from an elderly woman's body. And he's explaining the story. And I don't know, of course, because I've never talked to his daughter, nor have I really, really researched enough about what happened that triggered her to ask more questions. But it's clear that the research went on from there. And come to find out, it was her mother-in-law's body that these cells, which they call immortal cells, were extracted from. So now think about that. Who the heck knows a lady named Henrietta Lacks, who was born in Virginia, moved to Baltimore, like nobody, but yet and still they got in touch with Ben Crump, and he is suing Johns Hopkins University because a doctor from Johns Hopkins, from the hospital there, is responsible for, taking this woman's cells. So it is crazy, but you know what, my son?
Organ harvesting is a thing though. That's the thing, that is a thing. It's a real thing. And a lot of people say that's what a lot of these kidnappings and, you know, missing people are, that people are kidnapping and taking people for organs. And then they also say their bodies, when you bury your bodies, that you got to come back and check because they're organ harvesting. They're taking the organs out of the body. I know somebody said that they had to re-dig up a body because they needed to do some DNA research, and all the organs have been removed, everything. There was nothing but a shell of the body. So this is a thing, and it's crazy. And they said that these organs are very, very expensive and worth a lot of money.
The same thing happened to, what's his name, Kendrick Johnson.
Kendrick Johnson,
that
yes. Kid
that was killed in Valdosta, Georgia, where they found his body wrapped up in a mat behind the bleachers. And come to find out, the two people who are suspected to have been involved, they're students also. This was a high school student, and these a high school athlete, and these other kids are also high school students. And where they found the body and the whole story, it points directly to these two young men whose father or grandfather is worked at one time for the FBI. So, but when they did find his body, and you know, his parents had their own autopsy, his organs had been removed. Even his fingernails had been clipped, like the butts of his fingers were gone because they, you know, were trying to get rid of evidence. So, as you said, this is a real thing.
It's unbelievable, man. So this Henrietta Lacks situation, when I heard it, it was just weird. It was like, what is the chances that someone's daughter-in-law is somewhere and they just hearing somebody speak, and she realizes that it would be her, you know, somebody, her husband's family. Like, what is the chances of that?
Well, I think that the chances are nothing but God, that these people have to be exposed for what they've done to us and what they continue to do. And so now there has to be a reckoning. And thank God she was there. She did hear it. I think this happened 70 years ago, you know, so this has been.
The thing for me is like, why is it taking so long for you to acknowledge that this is just completely wrong and the family?
I mean, like, why? This is America.
Like, why do we go through shit like this? Like, why is there processes they're taking this long that we have
to. America. It's America. That's why. It's America. But anyway, with that being said, I don't even know how to talk about all the things. There's so many things. Okay. I don't know. But I'm glad to know that finally there's some movement on the Henrietta Lacks situation. And hopefully it will expose, as you said, this issue of organ harvesting, which of course they're doing it to Black people the most. That's why we were so heavily involved in fighting for what's the name of the little Baby Ra, Baby Amin Ra and his sister, because remember they were taken from the family, from the mother and father, and the internet went crazy. Tatiana Ali, the actress, hit us up like, hey, I need you guys to help me bring some light to this situation. And once you get more involved with the activists, the CPS activists, which is the Child Protective Services activists, there are kids being taken from their parents every single day. And I mean, in situations like we know that what happened to Amin Ra was crazy. It was crazy. Instead of the system giving them help for the right nutritional diet to support them, take, you know, being vegan and still breastfeeding, and he may not have been getting all the vitamins he needed because, you know, breast milk, if you in your body, if you don't have certain things, of course, it's not translating to the baby properly. That doesn't mean you take them off the breast. It means that the doctor has to give you a regimen that's necessary for you to be as healthy as possible to make the baby healthy. But they don't work with you as a vegan because they want you to buy formula. And so it's all, these people have had so long, my son, to be intentional, very, very intentional about what they are doing. They are so damn intentional about it. I tell you. But anyway, you know, it's funny because as I'm sitting here talking to you in real time, we won't put the child's name on the internet because, I mean, on our show, out of respect for the parent, but we are very close to a woman whose child has been being attacked in school, bullied and beat up for the last 2 years. And the school, in the last incident where multiple children jumped him, this school did not even want, I mean, at that point, the mom was like, I'm gonna have people arrested because she didn't know what, she doesn't know what else to do. The school's not really doing anything about it. And these kids have been beating up on this particular child and torturing him. And the crazy thing is she moved to a better neighborhood, hoping to move him away from the things that were was happening where we all live. And it hasn't helped. And so long story short, she's and the school refused to turn over the children. They don't even want to, they won't even bring the parents together for a meeting. They will not even bring the parents together for a meeting because they have found that there can be more fights between parents and they don't have to give the names because the protection of the system and, you know, all of this other shit. And meanwhile, as I'm sitting here talking to you, he had another fight today. He's been fighting his way through school for 2 years and it happened again today. It's just, and I feel like, you know, there's no excuse for picking up a gun. There's no excuse for knives and violence and all of that. But I also understand that our system is so messed up that if he was a kid that reacted in that way, yeah, sure, he would be wrong and would have to suffer the consequences. But we would be able to understand that for 2 years, the system has completely failed him. They've done nothing to protect him. So at this point, he's got to figure out probably how to protect himself. Now, thank God he has the kind of family that's there to support him. And he's a good kid, so he would never find himself in that situation. But it's not just picking up a gun. It's also suicide. It's also, you know, depression. All of that can happen to somebody. And it's the system's fault because the system is doing nothing to help him.
Yeah, it's actually disheartening and sad, man. He's a good kid. And just hearing the way that they're going about it. Like usually, you know, when we were in school and there were situations, parents were called. All parents, there was a meeting. We sat down. Your parents looked at my parents. We looked at each other. And we tried to work together to try to stop a situation. Like, and it's sad that they think that parents are supposed to fight over things that kids are doing. Like at some point, somebody's wrong, right? And the parents should be able to acknowledge, hey, if my child is the problem here, then I'm gonna discipline my child. I'm gonna communicate with you. You let me know anytime there's an issue. And that used to always cut it off for us. You know, when we started handling ourselves and there was no parents involved, that kept it going. But when parents actually got involved and they were in community and they were building with each other, I very seldom seen things get out of hand. Now, if you just come in after somebody's child got beat up and they come angry and there's no liaison in between, there's no mediator, nobody sitting down and trying to talk out and hash out a situation, then that turns into an issue. But to just bring two adults together and try to figure out the best solution and have y'all working together to try to, you know, calm a situation, that makes sense to me. So I don't understand the school's philosophy. I think it's stupid. I think it's, you know, it's counterproductive and it's actually leading to more because, but like you said, 2 years, the same situation, has been occurring and whatever the strategy that they're utilizing hasn't worked. You know, I'm just, I don't know, man. So much going on, man. I was at Kingdom yesterday, dope event. Basketball, you know, I'm always a basketball fan in New York. Kingdom was super dope, no problems. Seeing Harlem out, it was like the old Harlem back in the days, like with Grand's Tomb and Harlem Week. It just gave me that feel. And then I go home, and then they say way away from each other, which has nothing to do with it. Somewhere else in Harlem, people get shot and killed. Some one person is killed. They said a young boy who ironically was a basketball star is shot and murdered. And nine other people were injured. It's just so many things going on at one time. And, you know, you want to be able to enjoy the good things. And then there's some negative that comes, man. We need a reckoning. We need a wash. Like we need to put the whole city in some holy water, man. And just some sage. We need to walk around the streets with sage.
Well, I mean, that's not really a bad idea. But I, what I will say is that I am predicting that all the efforts that we are taking, which we now are starting our midnight marches, you know, we're fighting for resources. We're doing all the things. I mean, I was having a conversation with the new New York czar, as you mentioned, A.T. Mitchell, for violence. I was talking to him this morning and he was like, you know, 9 people shot in any place from a federal government perspective is a mass shooting that requires mental health services. The truck should be set up. The media should be there. There should be supplies. Everything that's needed should be poured into the community. And they don't do that for us because they don't see our lives the same, which is why they've moved on so quickly from Buffalo. Move right on, because it's just, you know, Black folks. And the only thing that makes it a little bit more spicy is that it was a white supremacist who committed that crime. So therefore it helps some of the political agenda that the media plays into, whichever side they may be on. But in our situation, Black and brown people out there killing each other, all we have is, you know, pretty much the activists and, you know, the community, and that's really it. And I'm predicting that no matter how much work we do, this particular summer is going to probably be one of the worst summers that we've experienced in a long time in terms of violent crime. I think that we have the ability to turn it around by the time the new year comes around and we get towards next summer. But right now, it's going to take some real brick and mortar work. People going to have to roll their sleeves up and be outside, literally out in the street. You're not going to solve this from behind a computer, doing a show, talking on the radio, even writing the check. That's going to be a little part of it and important, but it ain't going to be the whole thing.
Yeah, it's going, like I said that yesterday at the rally, it's going to take a combined effort. It's not a sprint. It's going to be a marathon. It's going to take it's going to be la-di-da-di and everybody going to have to be there. We're going to need activists, community people. We're going to need former gang people. We're going to need current gang people. We're going to need youth. We're going to need old. We're going to need every dimension of our community to come together to put just a dent in with it, because there's so much trauma and there's so much normalization of violence at this point, right? Violence has become so normal. Like, I be watching and I see kids were shooting at the precinct, in front of the precinct, just walking by, and they just decide they're going to have a shootout in front of the precinct. And it's like, I want to understand the rationale or just the mindset. When I used to walk by a precinct, I didn't want to do anything illegal. Like, as soon as I seen a police car, it kind of deterred me. These kids, you know, in this generation are not deterred by anything. So that's why I know that law enforcement can't stop the shooting, because they're not even deterred by the law enforcement. It's going to take a new influence. It's going to be, the culture has to shift to say that shooting and violence and these things are not okay. They're not cool. It has to be frowned upon. The culture has to say it together in order for it to change, you know, because these kids don't care about what law enforcement does or thinks. You know, some of them actually feel like, like I remember when we was young, I say all the time, when you went to jail, it was like a badge of honor. So some of them feel like it adds to their quote-unquote reputation when they do some time in prison. But what they don't realize is that when you're not coming home and you're doing 20 and 25 and 30 and 40 years in prison, it's completely, you're losing your life. And they find that out within the first couple of years of prison. So our job is to make sure that they don't have to find that out, that no one has to lose their life, no one has to lose their freedom, you know? So it's going to take a real concerted effort in a combination of all of our skill sets, understandings, emotions, feelings, and passions to really put it in this.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million. Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is he breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's how we own it.
Today, we've got a guest of all guests coming and joining Street Politicians. I have no idea why this is the first time that Roland Martin is on Street Politicians, but you know.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I have no idea. I think it's my song's fault.
No, man. Definitely. I definitely said Roland should have been here about at least three shows already. So.
I think he did. Sometimes I think I purposely have not invited Roland because I'm like, he's going to be too hard. I can't handle Roland on this topic. But now
too hard?
No, I'm happy. I'm happy to have you on.
That's why I got my Haiti shirt. My Haiti freedom shirt on today. So
so people will know who you
are. Well, I'm out working. We're shooting some promos. And so I'm going to wear the Juneteenth shirt on the show. But I figured I'll work in the Haiti shirt and I'll wear Juneteenth on the head.
Yeah, no, we know. That's the reason why we asked you to come and be on today. It was perfect because you are from Texas.
Born and raised.
And when folks are talking about Juneteenth, I'm not sure people really understand all the history. You said something the other day that really triggered me, which is that in 1980, Texas acknowledged Juneteenth. So already in 1980, Texas was there, you know, acknowledged. Texas
became the first state to make Juneteenth a state holiday. Got to give it up to my Alpha fraternity brother, the late state representative Al Edwards. He's known as the father of Juneteenth. He pushed this issue for years. He was the one that got it over the hump. So Juneteenth had been celebrated for all of those years since 1865 in Texas, but it officially became a state holiday in 1980. And so those of us from Houston, those of us from Texas, you know, we take Juneteenth real personal. And we were pissed off. We were pissed off when a lot of people were talking trash by saying, who asked for this? We don't need this. Because they had no understanding of what Juneteenth meant to us. Juneteenth was always about self-reliance, about empowerment. It wasn't just concerts and barbecues. It was also always voter registration. It was always enlightenment. And I think what we are now experiencing, you're now seeing why people have no clue about history. Even the great scientist Bill Nye just got his butt kicked on social media in the last 24 hours because he claimed that Juneteenth freed the slaves. But no, it didn't.
It didn't.
People also used to say, oh, y'all black folks in Texas, y'all was so late. Y'all found out 2 years late. No, it was issued January 1863, but it was unenforceable because they didn't control the Confederate states. And then, of course, the war didn't end until April of 1865. And then, of course, with General Granger comes in June 1865. But anybody who's still running around talking about, oh, they freed the slaves, not true. It was in December when the 13th Amendment was actually passed. That actually what officially ended slavery. But then again, it didn't officially end slavery because slavery is still on the books because we have the thing called the prison system. And so what I am hopeful, and we're already seeing it, is that by Juneteenth now being a national federal holiday, we're going to have people who now are forced to actually learn American history and know what the hell actually happened in this country and not just believe the fictionalized version or the half story we've often been told.
Well, tell me something real quick, and I know my son, you have a question as well, but what did Juneteenth look like in Texas all these years? Like now we see off businesses closed, government agencies closed.
It was that.
So
everything you're seeing on the federal level, you saw in Texas. You had businesses that closed, you had celebrations, you had commemorations, you had outdoor concerts. I mean, so all this stuff that you're seeing on the national level, because you gotta remember, black people in other states began to also have Juneteenth celebrations. Mm-hmm. So Juneteenth, you saw stuff in North Carolina and South Carolina. And so it began to be embraced in all across the South, other parts of the country. And so it became a thing. And that's why when it got elevated, there was this talk about making a national holiday. That's because Juneteenth had already been celebrated in 20 plus states. And so it had become a thing. And people have to understand, this is the only national event that even recognizes, mentions, or invokes slavery. Mm. And so when I hear people say, well, we didn't ask for this, I need people to understand that it's our opportunity to how we also use this. So CNN aired the big concert from the Hollywood Bowl, and that's great. But how are you using those same airwaves to educate people on the actual story, the actual history? You got everybody pissed off in the Hannah Jones and the 1619 Project, and they ticked off with Black historians like, you know, like Dr. Greg Carr and and so many others who have been talking about these things for years. But this is the opportunity for us to educate not just African Americans, but educate all Americans, because too often we've had really a horrible, horrible history lesson in this country because we haven't been wanting to tell the true story, all of it. And so this is the opportunity that we actually have.
So listening to you, you said that the 13th Amendment was what actually was the freedom. So the proclamation didn't free the slaves?
No, the proclamation only applied to slavery in the states that were in rebellion, the Confederate states. But the proclamation also exempted certain border states like Maryland and Missouri. So the Emancipation Proclamation did, it wasn't like this frees all slaves in America. No, it was specific to the states that were in rebellion. And then there were still exemptions. So slavery still continued after 1863.
Right.
Then it wasn't until April 9th, 1865, when the Confederates, when they surrendered, that then it applied to those states. But in Texas, they resisted that, and they kept it going for two more months. And that's when General Granger and those Black troops came in 1865 and said, no, you're actually free, because they had to send those federal troops to different states to notify the people of the formerly enslaved people of African descent. But again, even then, slavery was not illegal. It wasn't until the 13th Amendment, the first of the three Reconstruction Amendments, 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. But even when the 13th Amendment was passed, it allowed for slavery, involuntary servitude, whatever you want to call it, what the Constitution reads. So slavery in America still exists in our prison system.
That's right.
Right.
And that's
right.
That's why, Tamika, you and I have just talked about this beforehand, why we have to deal with this issue. So, like, I personally believe that companies should not be using prison labor.
Absolutely.
Because if we understand our history after the Reconstruction period, those same racist Southern plantation owners needed Black folks to work the land. So the peonage system came into place. So they literally created systems to keep Black people enslaved. And so then you had all of these laws, these minor infractions that led to long prison terms to keep people of African descent still working the land. And so that's why if you read the book, why is it escaping me? And I follow him, won a Pulitzer Prize. That's why I always say it's called Slavery Without Shackles. Jim Crow was Slavery Without Shackles, but the system still existed. Sharecropping still existed.
Well, you're talking about slavery by another name.
Yeah, sorry. Slavery by another name.
Yeah, something Alexander, right?
Yeah. No, not Michelle Alexander.
Michelle.
He was a reporter. He's a reporter with the Atlanta Constitution.
It's a great book.
Yeah. So, but that's why I'm always telling people that look, understand what happened after Douglas Blackman, mm-hmm. Slavery by Another Name. Mm-hmm. Called The Reenslavement of Black Americans from the Civil War to World War II. Mm-hmm. That's called Slavery Without Shackles. And so, which now means if we're having this Juneteenth conversation, and we're discussing the Emancipation Proclamation, we're discussing the peonage system, we're discussing this, now we're getting into the economics.
I can't ignore the holiday. I want us to go there to talk about the commemoration side and the commitment side, because you've been talking about equity, right? Like that's what makes this whole thing important. But before you go there, we're still on the historic piece, right? So right now, what we're learning is that there were many layers and levels to what freedom was supposed to be.
Yes.
But you're saying that the folks in Texas, I just want to make sure we're clear on this. The folks in Texas, it's not that they were just late and slow, but there was an actual attempt to stop the people from Texas from learning anything about it until the Black troops arrived. Now, the question I have for you is, did the Black troops go, because I think you said they traveled around to many places. Were there other states like Texas that they had to go to that were late in terms of being free?
You got to remember, during that period, those Southern states resisted. So they placed federal troops in state capitals to make sure those state lawmakers did not continue with the level of racism. So remember, Reconstruction lasts 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. W.E.B. Du Bois' book put it at 20 years. But so when you got to the election of 1876, it was a contested election. Mm-hmm. So the great compromise of 1877 was, all right, we're going to let Hayes become president. We Southern Democrats, we promise to leave the Negroes alone. Mm. So we need y'all to withdraw. There were three states where federal troops remained in the state capital to keep those Southern states from essentially reimposing slavery.
Damn.
So the deal was cut in so that's why it's called the Great Compromise of 1877. Well, Black Republicans blasted their own party for agreeing to that deal. It was a contested election in 1876. So the deal was, Southern Democrats said, all right, we'll let Republican Hayes becomes president, but y'all have got to agree to remove the federal troops from the last three Southern states. Mm. The Republicans agreed to that, the worst decision ever, because the moment they did that, those racist Southern Democrats immediately reimposed Jim Crow, and that was the beginning of Jim Crow, which lasted for the next 92 years. And that's what you saw, a systematic change. Just remember, Great Compromise of 1877. You had a Supreme Court, you had the Plessy versus Ferguson decision, but then you had the Supreme Court invalidating the Civil Rights Act, I think it was 1875, where they literally ruled Congress could not outlaw discrimination, and the Supreme Court opened that particular door. And then you had those Black state legislators who were then kicked out of Congress, out of the United States Senate. And then, of course, in 1890, you had the Mississippi Constitutional Convention, where they said, we're tired of Black people getting elected to statewide office. And so they changed the Constitution of Mississippi. And there was a guy named Isaiah T. Montgomery, an African-American. He was the only Black person who was attending it. He voted, along with those racists, to strip the power of the vote from Black people. And as a result, that's why whenever we call out, I don't use words like Uncle Tom, sellout, Oreo. I don't allow those to be used. But when I see there's a Black Republican who will diss Black folks, I call them a modern day Isaiah T. Montgomery. Mm-hmm. And he owned businesses, and to this day, his name is mud in Mississippi because of that decision. But they were angry with Black advancement. And the thing that, Tamika, that people don't understand that is so frustrating is that, after Emancipation Proclamation and the ending of the Civil War, Black people start getting elected. And if you read James D. Anderson's book, The Education of Blacks in the South, 1865 to 1930, what you will realize is that Black people put in the state constitution in the South for publicly financed education.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those were Black legislators. And when they booted all the Black folks out and changed the laws, they kept that provision right there. So we owe freed slaves for their being taxpayer funded education in the South as a result of them being elected to office. And so all of that history is really a part of Juneteenth. And so this constant battle for freedom. So it wasn't that they were free. No, they were free from being enslaved, but they were still not free. So what we have in Texas have been saying all these years, that we are in a constant battle for freedom, mm-hmm. that we still are not free. We simply were no longer enslaved.
Amen. So what do you think that we should be doing now? How should we be commemorating Juneteenth? Like, as a people, what should be the next step?
There too. We should be commemorating and celebrating, mm-hmm. but there should be a mission involved. Politically, registering people to vote. Two, we should be creating freedom schools where we literally are teaching this history. Mm-hmm. Those freedom schools existed in the Civil Rights Movement. And in fact, Marion Wright Edelman's group, Children's Defense Fund, they actually still do the freedom schools. They do the training at Alex Haley's former farm in Tennessee. And it's funny because I was on the train with her from New York and she told me about that. And I didn't even know that. And I said, wow, Marion, I literally have been talking about freedom schools in my speeches for a decade. We talked about how we needed that. But thirdly, we should be using Juneteenth as Black economics. Mm-hmm. In terms of, yeah. we should be saying, and again, I'm being very, I don't care. We should be saying, if you're having events, are you using Black caterers, Black transportation companies, Black PR companies, Black event planners, Black audiovisual companies, Black videographers, and all of that? Because I've long said, America has never really had a problem with Black people. We made America money. The problem is we never benefited economically from this. And so this should be an economic conversation. That also was a theme that we talked about that we also understood in Texas as well. This is about economics. This is about ensuring that we're not throwing parties and then we're not benefiting from it. We have to contend with this wealth gap, this Black wealth gap that is one-tenth that of whites in this country. And that means, and it's, yes, I totally understand people with the reparations argument and the reparations debate that's going on. But that's still hoping, trying to convince somebody to actually pass reparations. I'm going after the money that's on the table right now. And again, where I am is where King was. You read that April 3rd, 1968 speech and listen to it. It's a 43-minute and 16-second speech. We get caught up in, I've been to the mountaintop, I've seen the promised land. No. Go back where he talked about redistribute the pain, where he talked about supporting Black businesses, where he talked about going to places and shopping where they respect us, employing us. Go back and read Martin Depp's book on Operation Breadbasket in 1965, 1971, and look at that particular book, where they talked about what they did and how when they went after those companies, they were asking them to hire Black people in senior management, hire Black people on frontline jobs, invest money in Black banks, hire Black companies as contractors. And so part of the problem that I think that we've had is we've gotten so caught up in solely social justice, criminal justice reform, voting rights, which are all important. But if you do not deal with the money, mm-hmm. then you're not actually dealing with America. Mm-hmm. America is about the money. Mm-hmm. There is one federal agency that shares along with the White House. They can literally play flag football together. You walk 100 steps out of this building, you're in the East Wing. Treasury. That's the Department of Treasury. Right. White House is power, Treasury is money. And so that's the thing that we have to be on. And so I don't talk about money as this is love of money. But every problem that we talk about, finances, has a direct correlation to that issue.
That's a fact. We say that all the time. Like you just said, they didn't fear Martin the Dreamer. They got mad when he woke up. You know, they want to give us the Dreamer and tell us about, they never tell us about when he woke up.
But here's the deal though. Even if you use that, if I talk about the Dream, the same folk didn't even listen to that speech. That was a radical economic speech.
Absolutely.
But see, again, so I'm going to use it this way. The Dream part of King's speech is the hoop part of a preacher's sermon.
The hoop part.
That's when he he's rhyming and an organist is playing. And so when church is always about, man, pastor, preach that thing. Then you say, what did he preach about?
And you got 3 points.
And then they say, I don't really know, but man, he preached that thing, which means you can't tell me the scripture, and you can't tell me the 3 points. But you got caught up in the hoop part. So the I have a dream, the mountaintop, that's the hoop part. But
the hope part, if we can put those things together, right? Because yeah,
that's the make you feel good part.
That's right.
But
that's
you've got to deal with the thesis,
that's right,
or the scripture, which is what he laid out when he said they gave us a check stamp insufficient funds. Mm-hmm. And so that was the whole deal. So the battle for the 40 acres and a mule, the battle for right land rights, the amount of black land that was stolen in this country, black people who were literally run out of Arkansas, Mississippi, and Texas and Alabama, fleeing racism, fleeing black husbands running out because they said, we will kill you if y'all stick around. Black people literally left acres of land because of safety. You think about Tulsa. You think about the brother who owned the black newspaper who fled from Tulsa, and then they tried to blame it on him, and he opened a black newspaper in Buffalo. That's economics. So this is what I'm talking about. Wow. And so many of our people ain't got no clue about any of this. And so I want us to use Juneteenth and Black History Month and MLK's birthday to expand this. I keep telling people, don't play I Have a Dream or the Mountaintop part at any MLK event unless you go play the other part.
Mm-hmm. Roland, let me. So now I got to go all the way back. This is the end. We done. We at the end of your education today. I done told you that your new job is to start some type of educational forum, if you will, for activists, young activists, where they can hear that. Because it's one thing to put a book in someone's hand.
Right, right.
You've been giving me books to read, and I've been reading along for a while. Tiffany Lofton, we read along. But it is something else to hear you say the things that you just said and then get interested enough where you want to be fed more. And
that's the Congress of Negro Women building.
And that's what drives people to read.
Right.
When we did a session together last week on Juneteenth with
on Friday
before
InfoFlux. And when you got off, they asked me, a woman said that she was struggling with helping getting her children, especially her sons, to sit down and read. She said it's really difficult. It's the hardest part of their educational experience. And what I said to her is, it's the content. It's what you're giving them to read.
Right.
Why, to your point, after school, at home,
right,
if you want them to read, you have to be able to give them things that's interesting. Well, the thing about what you're doing in terms of educating people is you make folks interested enough to go read the content, right? The material. They don't want to just read when you telling them that basically white people had everything. Black folks was just slaves. And there's no stories except Martin Luther King and Rosa.
Totally wrong.
And that's the end of the history lesson. But that's not what I want to talk about. I'm going back to your first point about people who said, we don't need Juneteenth. I didn't say we don't need Juneteenth, but I was certainly one of those saying, we are calling for this, and this, criminal justice issues.
Yes.
We're calling for marijuana reform. We want people released. We all of it. We want gun money for gun violence. And y'all giving us this holiday, and what we were concerned about is that we would get a holiday and not get the other legislative items that need to move. That brings now, so we already understand, you know that, and you agree with that, but also you're saying Juneteenth is important because it forces us to have those other conversations. It forces people to say, if you believe in observing the holiday, then you should believe in giving us what Juneteenth is supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. That's not even my point. I saw in the last couple of days that you were in a heated exchange with other people that I respect intellectually on Twitter. Y'all were going back and forth about the Asian hate bill versus the African-American hate bill. And I see both sides. I see you saying that under the civil rights,
Civil Rights Act.
Civil Rights Act, that's the word, that it does cover hate crime issues, right? But then I see these individuals saying, well, how come we can get an Asian bill, an LGBTQIA bill? Now, check this out. I know the Asian bill happened. You got Mitch McConnell's wife, an Asian woman. You've got a whole Congress that was on the same page about voting for the Asian hate bill. But Black folks do want to see, just like we got Juneteenth, they want to see something that says African-American protection.
But you skip one. You skip okay. one. Go. The Matthew Shepard James Byrd Act.
Oh, I see. I don't know that one. Tell me.
That was a hate crimes bill. Mm. It was named after Matthew Shepard, the gay young man who was killed, and James Byrd. It is called the Matthew Shepard James Byrd Hate Act. And that's, again, that's specifically named after gay white boy and a Black man. And it was, and that was in response to hate crimes. And so what people have to understand is that, and this is why I walk people through, the impetus for the COVID-19 Hate Act was the attack on Asians. That was the impetus. But the impetus does not mean it's only for them or it was only about them. So this year is the 50th anniversary of Title IX, right? If you're a woman, you're like, man, I'm glad we have Title IX. Title IX wasn't about sports. Title IX actually was about opening the professional schools to women. So you had an explosion of women, doctors, dentists, lawyers, engineers, you name it, because of Title IX. Ask the average person, where does Title IX come from? Mm-hmm. It is a provision of the Civil Rights Act. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ask somebody who's disabled with the American with Disabilities Act. Do you know how that got passed? It's a provision of the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm. But listen, Mark, I gotta add one thing.
Why were women even put in the Civil Rights Act? Because the racist state representative out of Virginia, I think his last name was Smith, he thought that's what was gonna kill the bill if he put women in. In fact, it got more votes. So what people are arguing when they say they want to see a specific bill for us, you can't, laws that are passed by Congress don't apply just to one particular group.
But that's not, when you hear the word Asian, right? That's a particular group. Asian.
It's not one. It's not in the bill. No, it's not.
It's not called the Asian bill?
No, it is not. It is called the COVID-19 Hate Act. That's what the bill is called. Mm-hmm. It was because you had attacks on Asians, this dramatic increase, you had individuals who were saying, we need some protection. If you actually read the bill, it literally does not apply to just Asians. The pretext of the bill describes these things that have happened to Asians. But when you read the bill, when you read the remedies apply to everybody. The creation of a database that applies, that's not only Asian attacks that go in, that's attacks, as any hate crime attack goes into that database. So the bill actually, it's not a strong bill. It doesn't actually do a lot. In fact, the bill that was passed by the House after the Buffalo shooting actually is a stronger bill against white domestic terrorists.
Well, so okay. You're not going to say Black. Basically, you're saying the possibility of us getting a bill that says Black is not going to happen.
Because Roland, before you answer that, the issue is marketing, right? You've got the White House using the word Asian. You have also Congress talking about the Asian hate crime, and you had the Asian community
right.
Being very, very grateful for what happened and their right. elected officials and others stepping forward. Why is it so hard? Because now you got LGBT, that's just signed the other day. Now it may not be the name of the
bill. That was an executive order.
It's executive order. What is the problem? And that's what I'm saying. I hear you.
Hold up, but how was the 64 Civil Rights Act sold? That was Black.
Okay, well, guess what? We need it again. We need to do it now.
Okay. So we want the Civil Rights Act again when you already have a Civil Rights Act.
Well, I don't know so much about the Civil Rights Act again, but I do.
So what is the bill that people want? What's the bill?
definitely something around lynchings, because we haven't even passed that, have we?
No, it's passed. It's already been signed into law. It's passed.
When was that? That was last year or something?
Yeah, it's passed.
It just happened.
Right. But the point is,
they didn't say, they weren't walking around saying it's the Black anti-lynching bill. They never used that language. Every time it seems like everything that has to do with Black people, the language that's used is inclusive.
No. The George Floyd, perfect example. The George Floyd Justice Act will apply to everybody. Mm-hmm. That bill has actually been positioned essentially as a Black bill.
Okay, but Roland. You get
me. No. Again, this is what I'm trying to understand. Do we want the remedy, or do we want them to say Black when they've actually said Black before? Are we saying we want to hear it in 2022? What I'm saying is literally when the Civil Rights Act was passed, that was Black. When the Matthew Shepard, James Burt Act was passed, that was gay and Black. So we've actually had it before.
So the problem is
we've actually had bills before where Black was mentioned. It was called the so-called Black Bill, Voting Rights Act. Even though that applies to a variety of people, that's always been framed as a Black issue. Mm-hmm. And so what it sounds to me like, people today are like, well, I wasn't around then, I want to hear Black now. But to act as if that hasn't happened is simply factually incorrect.
But I think it's true that we haven't been around, right? I'm 42, so the history that you have, there's new information for me to learn every day. But what I will say is that the challenges that we are facing require new and improved approaches, right? And we know that there needs to be new ways, just like the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act had to be passed because there needs to be new remedies or had to be signed, the executive order,
right?
Because there needs to be new remedies to deal with policing, but it's not enough. We're still dealing with mass
shootings.
We're still
dealing with mass shootings. So what specifically do we want?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
here's the deal. I don't waste time with people like, yo, we need a Black bill. Okay, what's the bill? What's the bill?
I'm gonna tell you this, and we're gonna end this for now. But obviously, there's need for much more dialogue on screen, off screen, on Twitter, off Twitter, because we have to all get educated because we all on the same side. The one thing I will say is that in that Asian hate bill, which you said is the COVID-19 hate act, there were resources that was specifically earmarked for therapeutic services and services basically to address dealing with violence within the Asian
community. No, that's not true. That is not true. Any group can apply. No, I'm trying to tell you, any group can apply for the funds.
Okay, well, they're doing a help. You're doing a better job.
I'm telling you, I literally read the bill on the air. The woman who actually put the provision in with the money responded to the tweet, to one of the tweets. So again, the grant that you're talking about, any community group can apply.
Okay, I'm just telling you.
The money is not only for Asian groups to apply.
They're not doing a good job.
That's no shock.
And I promise you that Black folks who are dealing with mass shootings on the streets of America don't know that they can go apply right now to get mental health support.
Which is why I need those Black people to watch Roland Martin Unfiltered and the Black Star Network. Because the reality is you're not going to get information from these other sources. They're only going to talk about that. And that's precisely why. All of that stuff that I heard from people, that's why I said, y'all, here's the bill. Here's the language. Somebody hit me off in the chat. Well, what about the money? I'm like, they put in 30 million. I'm like, what does it say right here? These are the groups that the money is for. And so there are federal, when you talk about LGBT, guess what? If there are resources there for LGBT, Black LGBT groups should be applying. We shouldn't be, well, that's for white folks. No, you Black and gay or lesbian, boom, apply for the funds. What we have to understand is, and this is all I'm saying, I need our people not to be so locked and loaded on the emotional part. I need us locked on the factual part and moving it forward. And so we know the impact of the George Floyd Justice Act. I told the families directly on the anniversary of his death, I said, y'all should make a public call for President Joe Biden to have a meeting at the White House with y'all and law enforcement and tell Scott, Graham, and McConnell to be at the meeting as well. I said, and I told Ben Crump, I said, to get this thing back on track. I said, now, here's the deal. Y'all call for it. If Biden doesn't do it, that's on him. We can kick his ass. I said, but if he does it and the Republicans don't show up, we know exactly who we can target. But what I'm not going to do, and this is where my studying of our history comes in, what I am not going to do is get stopped at the emotional door and not focus on getting the results. And I think, unfortunately, too many of our people are caught up in, well, it don't say this. What does it say? What does it do? And I want us also focused on that, because we have to get stuff done.
But there's certainly much more need for conversation about this. And I love it, because we got to be brought up to speed, because we're not going to be able to make any change if we just, if we don't know the information.
So, right. And that's why Black owned media is so important, because again, we're going to read the bills. Mm-hmm. We're going to go get the information. We're going after the sources, and that's the problem. And I'm be honest with you, a lot of our folks spend more time retweeting something MSNBC or CNN said than what we talk about. And people are like, we didn't know. That's why we exist 5 days a week. We every day, because I don't want us depending upon somebody else who's not going to give us the information.
Roland Martin, unfiltered. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Ken. We appreciate
you coming back for show.
And y'all download the Black Star Network app. Because that way, if YouTube or Facebook block us, trust us, we own the app and it won't be blocked.
That's right. Thank you.
That's right. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
All right.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is he breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's how we own it!
Roland has so much information in him, it's like...
I mean, but it's a lot, right? And there's so many different perspectives. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of other friends who have different perspectives, and they're all educated, right?
Oh, all brilliant
people.
We're talking about brilliant, and we ain't talking about Joe Blow from over the road. We talking about people who also study, and I'm sure they have a perspective to respond to what he just said as well. But it definitely helps me, like I'm because I couldn't understand exactly what was happening. So now that he explains what his position is, I get why he continued to push his point, but I still understand the point that they were making in terms of the idea that the administration went out and marketed these bills a certain way.
The reality is that black is not a good marketing strategy.
They don't want to use the word.
They don't want to use it. Just like when you was talking about the Mar Arbery case, right? And you talked about how, you know, Ben and others had wanted them to specifically point how this was racism that the attorney was using, and a white woman who did an excellent job, she chose not to focus on that, right? Because in the eyes of a lot of people in America, white people in America, it's not something that they want to identify with, right? They don't want to focus on the fact that America is racist. They don't want to focus on the fact that these things are specifically happening to white people, right? So they want to put us all into this one category and say, okay, blacks will be able to benefit more, and it will actually happen if we don't focus it primarily on blacks. And that's just a strategy that America uses. And a lot of us aren't comfortable with that.
You got to call it out direct.
But we have to call it out direct until we make them uncomfortable enough to where they do the things that they need to do for us directly.
Listen, we got so much going on for Juneteenth. We did get a lot of information from Roland, and we need to actually cut the show so we could go jump on a Juneteenth celebration and commemoration event with our brother, Reverend Stephen A. Green. So yep. There is, unfortunately, we moving. And, you know, I think that's what it's all about. It's cool that we do a podcast, but it's even more important that we're on the ground, because at this evening, we've got to be somewhere for Brittany Griner. I mean, by the time folks get to see this episode,
you said we need to be doing things.
Yeah. By the time people see this episode in just 2 days, we would have done more work than many folks do all year long in terms of their activism. So
with that said, I'm not going to always be right. Tamika D. Mallory is not going to always be wrong, but we will both always, and I mean always, be authentic. Juneteenth. Peace.
Peace.
Listen to Street Politicians on the Black Effect Network on iHeartRadio.
And catch us every single Wednesday for the video version of Street Politicians on iWomen.tv.
That's how we own it!
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.